Good morning, my name is David Rowe. I'd like to talk about open hardware, in particular open hardware for business. Yeah, okay, about 3 years ago I got interested in the idea of embedded Linux hardware and applying open hardware development models to that. So the idea is with open hardware, you publish your designs, you encourage other people to copy, to modify, to hack, just like you would software. Toaster's happening. Didn't decide to get another toaster model. Instead, we've been working with embedded IP PBXs based on Asterisk software using UC Linux on the Blackfin embedded processor. Since then, the open hardware model has also turned into an open hardware business model. There's several of us around the world who actually have businesses based on products derived from open hardware. So I wanted to talk a little bit today about open hardware, where it all came from, and in particular how open hardware is working out for business. It's all a bit of an experiment. We don't really quite know where we're going. We feel like we're Linux in 1992, and we're not quite sure where this is going to turn out. But we're having a lot of fun and trying some interesting new ideas in the meantime. So my background is, for about the last 15 years, I've been developing computer hardware, computer telephony hardware and software. 10 or 15 years ago, it was PCI cards that went into a PC and implemented voicemail systems. Or, you know, press one for this, press two for that option. These days, it's voice over IP is the main application for computer telephony. I've had grown and sold a small business, been a director of some other businesses in similar space. And I must say, even though I'm quite competent in the technical side, you know, Linux, hardware, software, DSP, getting a business and a profitable business, one that can pay me, was one of the hardest things I ever did. So generally, at least for me, with this sort of coming from a geeky mindset, developing a profitable business is a very difficult thing. Late in 2005, I discovered the Blackfin UC Linux project and the open hardware idea. What these guys were doing was they ported UC Linux to the Blackfin processor. That processor is a little low-power CPU that's really optimized for DSP operations, so signal processing sort of work. Such as voice, video processing. However, the cool thing about this processor was a DSP they got to run Linux on at the same time. Before then, what you generally had was a host processor, then a separate DSP processor. By combining the two, it made possible some exciting new embedded projects. Now, the interesting thing these guys had done was Analog Devices in the US. They'd made open all their hardware designs for the development boards. So I got thinking about that, and we took that idea a few steps further. I kicked off the free telephony project. The basic aim is to develop a bunch of telephony product designs and release them into the open source domain. That's been going for about 3 years now. My income is pretty much from open hardware products and related services. So I've actually turned this into a real business, even though I give away all the circuits and designs of the products that I build. There's quite a few people now involved in these sort of products, these embedded IP PBX products based on open hardware designs. The motivations are a variety of different areas. There's sort of the social entrepreneur, nerd values type people like myself who just want to maybe improve the world a little bit, and that's our main motivation for open hardware and pushing the designs out there. Other people just think the technology is really cool and like playing with it. And then some people are motivated by business aims. So there's sort of a mix of different people involved in this area. And I guess some of us share some of those motivations at the same time. As a case study about how open hardware works, this is the IP04. It's a small IP PBX. Inside there's an embedded processor that runs UC Linux and Asterisk. And on the top here we have these modules that hook it up to telephones and telephone lines. Typical application would be it might sit in an office and replace a commander system, give you an office phone system, and let you make phone calls over the internet as well as over the regular telephone network. They sell for around $400 US, and we've sold several thousand of those. You can download the design from my website if you'd like to build one. It's an open hardware product. I'll hand that around. Feel free to have a peek inside. It evolved from several other open source initially some guys, I was working on a telephony side. I developed some telephony interfaces. Some other guys had developed a motherboard, and we merged those two designs together, just like you'd merge a couple of software routines over a period of time. And we used collaborative development techniques, such as we used some open source tools initially, and CVS. An example is I'd work on one of the projects during Australian daytime. I'd check it into CVS, and some friends in Bulgaria would work on the rest of the design. I'd wake up in the morning, and they'd completed another 10% of the design. Because we'd check the printed circuit board, the CAD files on the CVS. About the time I developed the prototype of the IP04, I was contacted by a Chinese company who saw some business opportunities in making these things in volume, and we've since entered into a partnership where they manufacture them, and we distribute and sell these worldwide now. We've sold several thousand to date, and there's been many derivative products. This is the latest one. It's the IP01, just a baby version of the IP04, same sort of processor, but a single port device. It's like if you're familiar with ATAs, it's like a very, very powerful ATA, or an ATA with a PBX inside that runs Linux. I'll pass that around. Plus, there's been 8-port versions that have been versioned with digital as well as analog trunks developed. So it's forking, if you like, into other products, just like an open source software project might. The thing that attracted the company in China was they're really good at volume manufacture. They do a great job, the quality's high, they can do it at an excellent cost, much better than we can do here in Australia. But they don't have that sort of in-house electronic engineering and software engineering expertise that the open source community can bring to it. So it's one of those partnerships where everyone wins. And they're happy, they've got a product they never could have dreamed of developing. We're happy, we're getting it manufactured to a quality level and price we could never have dreamed of achieving. So pretty good partnership. This just shows how the IP04 came together. The initial design was there were some gentlemen in Europe working on a sort of a motherboard, if you like, for the Blackfin processor. I said, this is really great, but we really need Ethernet and USB, so I contributed to that part of the project. At the same time, we'd been working on some analog phone ports for the Blackfin processor, and then we combined them all to develop the IP04 *IP PBX. So sort of incremental design, putting building blocks together. Each of these, though, it's a little bit more than downloading software. You need to get the parts, you need to solder it together, build prototypes, debug it, etc. So a little bit more time consuming than perhaps a software project, but similar sorts of ideas. So there's a lot I could say about the technical side of open hardware development, but I want to focus on the business side for this presentation. And after 3 years, we've got some ideas of what works and what doesn't. What seems to work best is derivative designs and tweaking. For instance, taking the IP04 to an IP01, adding this interface, removing that one, customising some part of it. That seems to be the most powerful use of open hardware in business. It gives you a bit of a leg up. Instead of designing the product from scratch, you can take an existing product and tweak it. Some gentlemen from Italy contacted me over the weekend, and they want to make it talk to a radio, a VHF radio for talking to trains. So they need a slightly different interface on it, but the same basic motherboard. So now they've got a product they can run with to serve their business needs with very little development effort. The development is incredibly efficient. Because you're basing it on proven open source components, when you put them together, things tend to work. If you had to do all this development by yourself, it would take a lot longer to debug things. I've been developing electronic products for 20 years, and the fastest development times I've achieved have been with these sorts of open source products. That little PBX there was making phone calls less than a week after I finished soldering it together. Normally that would take 6 months or something like that for many products, electronic products, if you use closed development techniques. A lot of it falls back on just traditional business models once you move on from the open hardware side. Just branding and reputation. Because I've got a name, a website, I've been working on this stuff for a while, people come to me for, as well as the hardware, for consultancy work in this area. So you tend to develop business that way. Just regular things like be good to your customers, support them well, finding a niche. Once again, these are all pretty common with conventional business. They also apply to open hardware. The point I'm trying to make is open hardware is not a panacea. It won't suddenly allow you to jump over everyone if you don't get these other business things right. Value adding is a good way to make money out of this. Because it's so open, what we get is, for instance, some of my resellers in Australia take this product, flash their own image on it. They might put their own logo, do all the configuration and then put it into some customer's site and support it. So because it's all open, they've got complete control over what this device runs. Some people threw away all the software we put on it and turned it into a fax machine for satellite modems. They said, thanks for the hardware, boys, but that's what we want. That's the sort of power you've got with open hardware and you don't have with closed systems. And I guess what I've seen from a sort of a broader economic model, it's a bit like open source software. If you give away one part of the design where people used to make money, for instance, people used to make money over proprietary hardware, or still do in many cases, the value then migrates to some other part of the business model. And it's a bit like open source software. The operating system is free, but then we make our money out of support or adding other features to that system. So the value doesn't go away. It just moves to another part of the model. And generally, the world gets a little bit better. A good example is, because of Linux and all that open software, we can buy a wireless router for $50. Now, if that was all closed software someone developed in a lab, it would cost us a lot more. So the net effect, at least one of the effects I hope to happen, is that the cost of telephony, the cost of making a phone call, will be driven down. This PBX competes with some others that are three or four times the price, with equivalently the same architecture and same feature set. From a technical point of view, what works is peer review. We have other people looking at your circuits, finding bugs, helping you debug it. I've had chat sessions with people halfway across the world helping me debug my circuits, just like you would software. And that's very new to me in developing hardware. Normally I'm just stuck with whoever's in the room to help me. Also, just having the wealth of open software on one of these boxes just makes such a difference to the functionality. If someone wants another feature on the box, we just cross-compile it and there you go. So just the fact that it is based on Linux and open software. And I guess we've come to reveal that a lot of these hardware vendors have a dirty little secret, and that's most hardware products are 95% software. That's a trend as processors get faster, things that used to be done in hardware are now done in software. For instance, the PBX in the 1980s was a massive rack-mounted thing with lots of analog electronics. Now it's all done in DSP on a little processor. The effort involved in this project, even though we talk about open hardware, was probably 10% of the time was actually spent doing hardware work. The rest was messing with made files for UC Linux and debugging software and writing drivers. So even though we call it a hardware project, most of the work is in the software. You guys all develop the software for free, and commercial companies put it in their products and sell it back to you. But most of the work is actually in the software, with most of the value as well. What doesn't work? Cloning. A couple of times a month, someone will email me, say, right, I want all your CAD files, I want to put this thing into production. But what they find out then is that there's a little bit more involved than just sending the files down to the local manufacturing factory and saying, I want a couple of hundred of these. You need to understand a little bit about the design, for instance, to be able to commission it, to be able to test it, to be able to fix minor faults. There's some cost involved in setting up a large production run. And just like regular business, if you try and have a business model that's just selling the same product to someone else, these me too business models just don't tend to work. A business is so much more than just the product, support, sales, the way you treat your customers. So we found that just purely cloning the product doesn't work. People haven't been able to make money that way, which is sort of counterintuitive. There's also the regular business traps. For instance, some of the people working in this technology focus very heavily on technology, keep reeling out new products without focusing hard on the business side, which tends to be a bit of a in the blind spot of many geeky entrepreneurs on the business side, certainly was for me. Issues like selling the product based on costs rather than features and other things, that's another trap. But if you keep trying to just sell the lowest cost, it's a downward spiral, no one makes any money. Lack of support, distribution issues, all very common business problems. The technical side, open source CAD tools are a little immature. Most people now working in this area have moved to closed CAD tools just because they're better. Engineers like to use the best tool. Ultimately, they'll use the best tool whether it's closed or open. Most of the time it's open these days, but when it comes to computer CAD tools, there's still a bit of a lead, I guess, in the closed source area. This product is a little bit different in that it requires a bit of a community-based approach. There's so many inputs into that product, hardware and software, that I know nothing about. For instance, most of the open source software I didn't write and we had difficulty supporting. So to use the product, and especially to sell it, you need to have a bit of a community outlook. You need to prepare to interact with forums and help each other. A lot of traditional business guys don't really get this. They just want to take it, like the box movers, they just want to import it, sell it at 10% or 30% and have you do all the support without them actually getting involved in the community. And that hasn't worked out too well. Those resellers that do have a community outlook, you know, interested in that, flashing it, understand the technical side, get involved with the forums, then they've made more of a success with these sort of products. And I kind of like that. I like the community sort of models in open source, and it's great to bring them across to business. It is a bit hard to understand open hardware. A lot of people don't quite get it, and as I said, we're working it out ourselves as we go along. One of the issues I briefly mentioned was, why don't people just copy my product? It just doesn't tend to work out that way in business. Just purely copying it. It doesn't seem to be an effective business model. A few people have tried it and it just doesn't work for them. They've sort of moved on after they didn't really get involved in some of the other aspects. There's a big paradigm shift in, say, flashing a commodity product like a router to designing your own hardware. This is I guess, an issue in understanding open hardware that I'd like to communicate a bit better to the open source community. We're all used to getting a WRT54, recompiling OpenWRT, flashing it. But to actually say, well, hang on, gee, that router's great, but I wish it had this, or I wish a little bit more flash, a little bit more RAM, this interface. Well, we can actually do that these days. It's not actually impossible to design your own custom open source hardware for open source software. It's not a huge step. And the reason is that most of the value and man hours in developing it are in the software side. We always do that really well. But for some reason, people are not quite ready to make that jump across to the full custom hardware side. It really isn't that hard. We did it with a pretty small team. The amount of work in that IPO to get it to the first sale was probably less than a man year. And the software that we put on it was thousands and thousands of man years of effort that we just took from the open source community. So, you know, if you've got someone with a bit of electronics knowledge, it's really not that hard to get these things going. How open is open hardware? Open hardware is a little bit different. You just can't download it like you can a piece of software. Atoms cost more than bits. Also, you need to, you know, assemble the thing. There's tooling involved. So to look at what is the actual open components, the first thing is some CAD files, the schematic, documentation about issues with the design, things to watch, how to assemble it, how to test it, commission it. PCB CAD files and mechanical design, for instance, the case design. Then there's other issues like tooling and things like that if you're going to go into volume production. I started off with open schematic and PCB CAD files, so pretty much everything you needed to assemble one. Also, instead of, say, having a private documentation, I blogged as I went. I used the blogging method to talk about my progress and got a lot of input that way and built a lot of excitement around the project by blogging on. Since then, most people seem to be keeping the schematic open, but they're closing the PCB and tooling. Part of that is a practical reason. The PCBs tend to be designed with closed source tools that are just better at the job than the ones they're conventionally used to use. So it makes it hard for anyone to work on the PCB files unless you have $10,000 CAD software. But that seems to be the common thread. I'm sort of sitting back and seeing what's happening. I'm interested to see how this develops. So people are keeping the schematic open for the derivative designs, but closing the PCB and tooling. It's not a particularly interesting question to me. Like, I'm not a purist in the sense that everything must be free. Everything must be open on this. The reason is that if you wanted to go into production with things, there's always some volume production investment. It doesn't matter how open it is. The tooling, for instance, stencils to make a printed circuit board, injection molds to make the case, they're artifacts that you must manufacture and they cost money if you're going to go into volume production. So even if you made all the files open, there's still a finite investment in it to make volume production. Not if you want to build one yourself at home, though. You can do that with pretty simple tools, just without a custom case. Also, to get a PCB made for these with these modern tools is just a 1 or 2 day job. And it also encourages, so as soon as an engineer starts doing that, I'll guarantee he'll start modifying it. He won't be able to leave alone. He'll be able to do it better than me any day of the week. And that's what I like to see. I want to see modification, hacking and things. So I guess I've arrived at a position where I'm not really a purist about how open it has to be. As long as there's enough there to hack the thing, to tweak it, to modify it, and to do derivative designs, then I think it's open enough. But that, of course, is different people have different opinions on that. One thing that hasn't happened yet that I'm really interested to work on is I'm quite interested in using IT for development. I've been working with some foundations and some organisations who are deploying these things in Africa to give low-cost telephony to people. One of the advantages of these signs is because they're embedded and small, they're very low power. They can be run off solar systems coupled with long-range voice over IP systems based on Wi-Fi. Now, there's some interesting things. Once the hardware's open, we can do things like step away from conventional business model. If you normally buy an electronic product like your laptop or something, the sales price is 3 to 5 times what it costs to build in the factory. That difference is made up of largely marketing costs and profits for various resellers and distributors. Some projects like the OLPC have stepped away from that and said, but what can we do if we drive it down the cost of manufacture plus 10%? Their models I'm really interested in pursuing. For instance, an NGO could decide, right, we want to deploy, we want to give 20,000 people telephones. We'll take this design, we'll place an order with the factory in China, we'll do a contract with them to manufacture them for cost plus 10%, and then we'll use our existing channels to distribute it. Now suddenly they've given people telephones for 20% of the price that they would have otherwise had them. That's possible with open hardware models, because no one's locked down the IP. There's also options for local manufacturer. An African country could decide to get into manufacture of these things, grab the design, get their local geeks to understand the software and assembling them, and start doing local manufacture, thereby getting around tariff barriers and building local industry, rather than buying from some fat first world country, company. And also there's customization for local conditions. Currently working on a project where we're customizing an embedded router for developing world conditions, things like people put the power in the wrong way around, gets hit by lightning. People will try and hook up 240 volts to a 12 volt socket. These are things that happen that we don't really expect to happen in the first world. And that's it.
Expecting that to happen in the first world.
Well, hoping. Yeah, fine. And that's the end. So, call for questions.
I just had a question. Sure. So, how do you license this?
I started off putting GPL on it, but I understand that doesn't apply in many countries to hardware. There are a few open hardware licenses now emerged, such as the TAPR license, and that's sort of what I'm putting on my latest designs.
And is the TAPI like an academic license where anybody can do anything they want?
It looks a lot like the GPL, but customized to hardware. I haven't read it for a while, sorry.
So it has copyleft provisions?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes?
The problem with AutoCAD software is it mostly usability, that's the, you've got QCAD, which is the open source one. Is it mostly a factor of usability versus the usability of other products?
Yes, I think so. I've used the, for the print circuit board design, schematic design, I use the tools called GEDA. They worked okay for me, but they are probably 3 or 4 times as tedious to use as a modern sort of auto-routing type PCB software. Yes, so usability is the main issue. I continue to use the open ones, but...
Yeah, it's a real pain.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you have an issue with the open tools in terms of getting PCBs manufactured as a fault? As I understand, particularly in Australia, a lot of the PCB manufacturers are going to expect GerberFiles. Auto tracks or whatever, or is there?
Usually they'll work with GerberFiles, which is sort of like the printer output.
Yeah, in practice, that seems to work, all right?
Yeah, we throw out GerberFiles, and I've never had anybody do anything like that.
I heard about one of the big printer projects, was a Rex project. Do you have as well?
I've only heard about it myself, and I'm right. Not sure where it stays. I think they got to the hardware stage. Yeah, I'm not sure where they're at. The project is potentially wider volume.
Any other questions?
So your IPBX is your first sort of other project. What's your next?
The latest project is the Mesh Potato. A small mesh router that has voice over IP built into it. You can plug a telephone into it. The idea is these mesh routers I think something like this sort of form factor with an antenna on top, you put them on the wall in a township or a village, and it forms a telephone network with adjacent mesh routers around the village, and so you develop a small telephone network, a small telco, using open hardware and open software products, and no need for cell or PSP carriers.
So I'm guessing that the next step is to basically replace stuff like the Linksys routers and that kind of thing, more AV cell.
Yeah, I'd love to see that sort of thing happen. My particular interest where I'm driving this is to development work, products to help the developing world. But yeah, you could add DSL to these things quite easily, and we are doing a Wi-Fi open source Atheros chip based Wi-Fi router at the moment.
David, feel free to plug your talk later on in the week on the mesh potato.
I've been talking about the mesh potato on Friday. That's
11:40 in Social Sciences 2, I believe.
Thank you.
Anyone else? No more questions?